Okay, so today we are finishing up Perek Ches and finishing up Parshas Tzav at the same time. A couple of things to point out over the course of this Perek. Today is the 29th of December, 2017. It is the 11th day of Tevis, Tav Shin Ayin Ches. Okay, so we begin with a Ha'ara made by Rabbi Simon. So in the Imre Baruch, he quotes the following Mishnah in Seches. Seches Menachos. There we go. The in Seches Menachos, it quotes from the toward. There is a Mishnah that says, "Lo yikrivu keves baboki yikrivu ben arba'in." When you have a keves, when you have the korban ola that is brought as the korban tamid, that daily offering that is offered. So if it's not offered in the morning, it could still be brought in the afternoon. Not that it's going to be brought in the afternoon, but that even if you don't bring the korban in the morning, you could bring the afternoon offering. They're not ma'akev zubazu. They don't require each other. In order, the afternoon offering does not require the morning offering to have been brought in order for it itself to be brought. However, he then goes on and says, "However, lo mizbeach haola el betamid shel shachar." However, when the mizbeach was being established, now it was unclear for me from this mishnah if it only means only during the time of the mishkan or any time that they inaugurate a new mizbeach. Right, the mizbeach that they used in the mishkan was certainly not the mizbeach that they used in the base of Mikdash itself. But the first time that it's used, it needs to be brought in the morning as well as needs to be brought in the afternoon. So why would we require that? So it's probably this whole article has to do with the idea that yes, it's true that we work on things, we have a lot of mitzvahs we have to continually do. When we start something, it has to be started in the most perfect way. So to start a korban, start a mizbeach by only bringing korban in the korban in the afternoon and not in the morning, so that's inappropriate. So he quotes here from the Brisker Rav in the Riz al HaTorah that he points out that you could actually make this out from the psukim themselves, not necessarily in our section. Our section just talks about the miluim, but the command of what you were going to offer for these Yemei Miluim, for these inauguration days, while not found here, was found in Parshas Tzaveh. So the idea of bringing the korbanos, the korban tamid, both in the morning as well in the afternoon, is actually found in two places. So the more prominent one is found in Parshas Pinchas. Most in Parshas Pinchas, we read that every Rosh Chodesh, and in theory every day, if one who reads the korban, one who does the korbanos in the morning, so that's one of the korbanos, that one of the things that one is supposed to say on a daily basis. So what does it say there? It says, "Es hakeves echad taseh b'voker, v'es hakeves hasheni taseh ben harbayim." That there's going to be a keves that is going to be brought in the morning, and the keves is going to be brought in the afternoon. There is a story that there we know the Gemara tells us what is the most important mitzvah in the Torah. Right? There's a little machlokas there. What's the most important mitzvah, most important pasuk in the Torah? The Gemara makes a comment. I think v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, I think, is the number one. So there is, I believe, a medrash out there. Although I think I found the ones. I'm not sure if there is or isn't. But there certainly is a legend of there being a medrash that says that there's a third opinion as to what the most important pasuk in the Torah is, and that's this pasuk. That you're going to have a keves in the morning, a keves in the afternoon. That consistency is the most important thing in Torah observance. So that's a pasuk number one. Again, in Bamidbar it says es hakeves echad taseh b'boker v'yis hakeves hashini taseh ben arba'im. So the in Shmos, however, in Parshas Tetzaveh, in Perek Chaf Tes Lamed Tes 29:39, it says es hakeves ha'echad taseh b'boker v'yis hakeves hashini taseh ben arba'im. So what's the difference between the two psukim? So there's one letter that's the difference between the two psukim. In the pasuk in Pinchas, which is talking about the daily offering, what's going to be done every day, it says es hakeves echad. You're going to bring a keves in the morning. However, in Shmos, when it talks about the Yemei Miluim, the first keves that's going to be offered, it says, "Es hakeves ha'echad." The first keves is going to be brought in the morning. And perhaps that is indicative of this distinction as well, that the first day is going to have greater stringencies than the other day. The first day, and the halachic greater stringency that we're going to have is that if the morning is not brought, then hold off on dedicating the Mizbeach until the next day. You need morning in order to bring the afternoon. Don't have the afternoon be the first one. While on a regular day, if the whole, every Kohen oversleeps till 12 o'clock, and you can't bring the Korban Tamid anymore, so you'll bring it in the afternoon. He points out here one more idea, and that is based on the Shaila that is asked. Hanukkah passed recently, and there's a really famous question that's asked about Hanukkah, and then there's a not as famous question asked about Hanukkah. The really most famous question asked about Hanukkah is, come on.
Why is it 8 days?
Great, right. Why is it 8 days and not 7 days if a miracle is only 7 days? That is the most famous question asked on Hanukkah. It's a sefer, about 100 answers to that question. That's out there. However, in the yeshivas, the most famous question that's asked about Hanukkah is a question of the Pnei Yeshua. The Pnei Yeshua asks, he says, what was the miracle? What necessitated the miracle? Necessitated the miracle was that there wasn't any pure oil, or there's only a small amount of pure oil, and in order to get pure oil that's used in the menorah, so you needed to wait 8 days in order for that to come in, and therefore that's why that oil had to last for 8 days. Ask the Pnei Yeshua. You know, there is a halacha called Tuma Hutra Metzibur. What is that halacha?
You can use tamei oil.
Right, you can use tamei oil. In a situation where the majority of people are tamei, so you're allowed to use tamei oil. You're allowed to have people tamei offer it, and you're allowed to have the oil itself be tamei as well, which is also very useful in answering the question of why don't we bring korbanos bizman hazeh? Right? That question is that. Why don't we bring Korban Pesach bizman hazeh? So the first answer everybody gives is, oh, because we're all tamei. Well, that's actually the least pressing reason as to not bring Korban Pesach bizman hazeh. Most of the luck is by Korban Pesach as well. That if the majority of people are tamei, so you're allowed to still bring, you're still allowed to bring the Korban Pesach. Bus?
Where?
To the Beis Hamikdash.
There is no
Oh. That's perhaps a better question as to another reason why you wouldn't bring it. So that's the question. Is there really no Beis HaMikdash? Or there just is no standing Beis HaMikdash, but the space exists? And if there's no Beis HaMikdash, maybe you could offer Korban Pesach on a bama. You could have it offered on your own private altar. Anyways, it's a different question. So what is the most famous answer to that question? So the Pnei Yeshua's personal answer to this question is, De'ikar neis lo nasa elo odia lehem chibas hamakom aleihem. That the main part of the miracle was not because it needed to happen in order for the mitzvah to be done. It's because the people wanted it to be happened. They willed it to be happened. Because they so much wanted it, so Hashem came through with that miracle, even if it wasn't necessary. Even if they would have been able to do the mitzvah without it. That is the answer that is given to the by the Pnei Yeshua. However, he quotes here from Rav Shlomo Kluger, perhaps an answer that is based on this topic halachically, where he says that even if you assume Tumah Hutra Mitzibur, even if you assume that concept that if necessary to bring various korbanos or bring avodas in Tumah, where the majority of people are tameh, you are permitted to do so, that halacha would only be if the Beis HaMikdash is already active. But to start out the Beis HaMikdash in that way, so that would be inappropriate. That's not that you can't do. And that's what was going on at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. It was Chanukah because it was a rededication of the second Beis HaMikdash. Now, the truth is, it doesn't... Right, it was a rededication of the second Beis HaMikdash. Now, it doesn't answer why the miracle had to happen for all 7 days. It's just the miracle, it explains the miracle of finding the oil. I mean, that's the question. Why was it such a big deal that they found the oil? They would have been able to offer it anyways, because most of the people were tamei. So the answer is, they wouldn't have been able to offer it anyways, because on day one, in order to bring it for the first time, in order to rededicate the temple, it needs to be done in the most pristine way. It needs to be done in the most perfect way, and that would include having having oil that is tahor, rather than that is tamei. And of course, the muster being obvious that when you start something new, you need to make sure that it's done the appropriate, best, ideal possible way. Okay, that's idea number one. Idea number two, we're doing, I think, a potpourri today. Idea number two is found towards the beginning of the parak. So it says, Vayomer Moshe El Hay, the pasuk Hay, says, Vayomer Hashem Moshe El Hay, that zeh hadavar, asher tziva Hashem laso. So this is the thing which Hashem commanded, and what is the thing that he does? Vayakri Moshe Sarav Yasmanav Echatso Samamayim. And that's the beginning of the dedication, it's the beginning of the sanctification of Aaron and his children, right? So it opens up by Moshe saying to everybody else, this is the thing that Hashem commanded me to do. So why was it necessary for him to say that? So Rav Yeruchim, who is the Mashkiach in Mir, wrote the Musar Svarim Das Torah are from him. I don't think he wrote them. I assume that they were written by Talmidim. But Rav Yeruchim explains that there is a mission in Maseches Shkalim that talks about the people that would go in and collect the money that was brought for the Shkalim. All the money was brought, half, everybody brought their half shekels, it was collected, and the person would go in to collect it, so they were very machbid that A, he'd not have a hem in his clothing, and he'd not have shoes, and he'd not wear sandals, and he'd not wear tefillin, and he'd not wear kamiyas, right? Why not? Because they want him to be, Vas?
No question, no shy.
Right,
question.
They wanted to be him to be above any suspicion, and he explains that's how, any suspicion that he was taking any of the money for himself, and that's what it means by yisim nikiyim, that we have an idea that one is supposed to be nikiyim, one is supposed to be clean, a person is supposed to be pure, make sure that there is no possibility of anybody accusing him of violating any prohibition. So he continues on and says that's what's going on in this pasuk. And Moshe turns to the Eidah, and even though everybody trusted Moshe, in fact, halach is in another Mishnah in Maseches Shkalim, that nobody's ever supposed to be dealing with this type of money by themselves. It is actually an issue that Gemara Baba Basra talks about it as well, right? That the Gavai Tzedakah should always be working with somebody else in order to alleviate beyond, to be above any suspicion. So there's one exception to that rule that the Gemara points out, and that is Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu collected all the money for the Mishkan. We don't find anywhere that Moshe had a partner in terms of his the way that he was collecting it. That he just brought it all in. We don't see another one of Moshe. He had architects, right? Bezalel was an architect, but he didn't necessarily have access to the money. So
but
what's going on?
Moshe gave an accounting.
Ah. Very good. That's what Rav Yerucham points out. He says, yes, while it's true that Moshe perhaps didn't have a partner, but he was the most transparent of everybody, and that he gave an accounting. That's the end of Sefer Shmos. It's him giving him his accounting of all the things that came in. So because he was very clear and transparent and gave the accounting, so therefore Moshe was considered, it was clear. In fact, there is a whole thing about Moshe missing something, the balance, the sheets didn't come out, and we learned about this, anything. What was missing? So Medrash tells us that he was missing the hooks, the vavei hamudim, the hooks that connect the things from one to another. That's what was missing from Moshe's cheshbon, but yet it's very important, etc., and that's a whole drasha to give in Parshas Pekudei. Fine. So then he concludes. So this section here, though Moshe was above reproach with regards to the money, still there was a bit of a concern here because Moshe is appointing who at this point? Moshe is about to appoint his brother to be the Kohen Gadol. So at that point, when Moshe is about to appoint his brother to be the Kohen Gadol, he once again has to be very, very clear, to do his utmost to make it clear, this is not my call, I didn't make this decision, it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why this pasuk begins by saying, by Hashem says, this is the thing which Hashem commanded, it's not me, it's him. If you have any complaints, bring it up with him. Did it work? Not really, right? Right, it didn't work, because Korach still raised that complaint against him, but at least Moshe was doing his best in order to make himself be above suspicion with regards to this issue.
Wasn't there is some point where somebody challenged him, was it Korach? And he said, I might
have been
perfectly honest.
Is that
Korach?
Yeah, right, correct. Korach is the one who complained. Okay, one other thought that is here in the Sefer Lekach Tov. So he quotes at the end here from the Sefer Darkei Musar from Rav Naiman. What does he say? So the very last Rashi in the Perek. Take a look at the very last Rashi in the Perek. The very last Rashi in the Parsha. It says, "Vayas Aaron uvano." The pasuk says, "Aaron and his sons did." He's called Varim. Asher tziva Hashem biyad Moshe. All the things that Hashem commanded biyad Moshe. Right? Says Rashi. To praise them that they didn't go to the right or to the left. Praise them that they followed directions. So asks Sam, really? You got so much praise just for following directions? Why are they getting so much praise just simply for following directions? He points out that Rashi makes a similar point in the beginning of Parshas Mahaloscha. Parshas Mahaloscha we just learned recently on the last morning of Hanukkah. So the very beginning of Parshas Baaloscha, what does it say?
Well, if they commanded to do it, they're going to resent it. there's anger. You tell me to go sit and do it, and the person will just go sit and say, well, I don't want to do it.
Right.
But if they do it on their own free choice, so the resenting is not there.
So the praise is that they did it, even though they were commanded directly to do it. Okay.
Right.
Okay, good. Good. He makes the point that Rashi makes the same point in the beginning of Parshas Vayelos. So Vayas Kein Aaron. Aaron did this, meaning Moshe told Aaron, you gotta now, Hashem told Moshe, you gotta light the Aaron. And Aaron did it. As Hashem commanded Moshe. Says the Rashi here, Vayas Kein Aaron, Lahagit Shvachu Shel Aaron, Sheloshina. Same thing. So praise Aaron that he didn't change anything from what was commanded. So says Dr. Strong, yeah! He does deserve praise. You're commanding him. Anytime you're commanding somebody, you're subjugating them. And that they continue to anyways listen to the directions, that's a challenge, right? The only person that people always listen to all the instructions from are from their doctors, right, Dr. Strong?
Correct. They listen all the time.
Maybe this is a foreshadowing to what's going to happen in the next parsha when I'm done. And I'll be
Yeah.
Not follow instructions exactly.
Right. So in this, I think in the Sifsei Chacham, I didn't bring that Chumash today. But in the Sifsei Chacham, I think he points that out, that they did as Hashem commanded, as opposed to Aaron's sons who did not. Right. That is the Sifsei Chacham so points that out.
In this part of it, the sons are included in carrying out.
Okay. Right, so he as opposed to the next one when they didn't, and that's what the Sichem was meduyuk in that, I think based on the previous Rashi as well. Okay, so, but he wants to just make the following point, which is interesting, Yesod here. He quotes that there's another pasuk in Yirmiyah as well, it seems to make the same point, that Yirmiyah says, Lo yeshafti besod meshachkin ve'aloz mifnei yadecha bedas yeshafti, bedad yeshafti. Yirmiyah says to Hashem, I did everything right. I mean, I didn't go to the bars and hang out with all the other people, right? I sat alone. So asks the Darki Musar, and for that you deserve praise. What, just because you didn't do things that you're not supposed to, so therefore you deserve praise. So he he quotes here from Ramosha Rosenstein. That the point is that not that they're trying to highlight that they didn't do it, but rather the highlight here is that they didn't have a desire to do it. That's the thing. So wait a second, is that praising them, or is that right? Oh, they didn't have a desire to do it. Big deal, they didn't have a desire to do it. So he says, no, the fact that they were able to get themselves to the point where they had no desire to do it, that itself is an avoda. That itself took work, and that's the work that we're praising. So this is the issue that always comes up with the discussion of Gedolim biographies, or not to have a Gedolim biographies, etc. They only highlight the greatness, they don't highlight the fact that they didn't have a Yitzhar. I mean, how much did they work on themselves, or versus was this like a natural thing? Right, so that's a question that's out there. You know, I remember having a machlokas with my roommate once upon a time, saying that he raised this point. Well, what's the point if they didn't have to, if it spelled out that they didn't have to work? It's like, well, sometimes that itself is important to recognize, that some of the great people in our our religion didn't have to work that hard, and that's why they are so great, right? It's talking about the Rav Soloveitchik when he was an 8 or 9 year old. He was helping up all the bar mitzvah boys preparing their bar mitzvah drushas because they weren't able to figure it out on their own. And when he was 10 years old, right? I have a son who Baruch Hashem likes to read Yeshua. He likes to read a lot, and we always got to chase him off to bed, right? It's 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. What are you doing? Still reading, right? You got to get off to bed, right? So I don't think he goes up to his room and continues to read under the blanket. I don't think so. I'm not sure, but I don't think he does that too much. But I say about the Rav, when he was 8, 9 years old, his mother would chase him off to bed and told him, you know, stop reading, go off to bed. And under his covers, he would continue to read. What was he reading? He's reading the Minchas Chinuch. Right? That's pretty impressive. So sometimes there is a value in recognizing that these people are not normal. Right? That is an idea. When they talk about Rav Steinemann, so there are a lot of things to talk about him that we can relate to. And there are some things to talk about that we can't really relate to. That Rav Steinemann, until for the last 60 years after he came to the land of Israel, slept on the same mattress he got when he came into the land in 1949 that was given to him by the Jewish Agency. Right? That's not really something that until a doctor told him he absolutely couldn't, and he did listen to his doctor. Right? Or that if you check videos of him talking to people, You see, he's sitting, he sat on his bed where his feet couldn't touch the floor. He was a short person, and his feet couldn't touch the floor, and he didn't have a back to his chair. He sat with like a table pushed up against his back so that he'd be able to stay awake longer, right? That's not normal. So on one hand, we say, well, what's the point of hearing that story? We can't relate to it. On the other hand, there is a value, A, in recognizing that there are a couple people in this world that are malachim, that are like angels, and also recognizing that people that claim the title of Gadol Hador, right, are not normal, and that there is some amount of distance, and perhaps that deserves a little bit more of our trust, respect, and guidance and things like that. But of course, there is, they did have to work hard to get there. I think I share it here. There is a story that I heard this story a while ago. I didn't see this in any of the Hasidim that came out. But I remember Verdinsky from Muncie listening to him on his shir, saying that he told a story that that there was somebody who grew up, Rav Steinemann grew up in Brisk, which, his rabbi growing up was the Brisker Rav. So he, I assume he probably, Rav Salvechik might have left already by that point. But he certainly, the Brisker Rav's children were his friends growing up. And the way he, when he came time for him to be drafted, so he ran away to Switzerland. And there was a bunch of boys who did this, and that's, he was put into a labor camp, but that's how he survived the war, because he was in Switzerland, etc. So at some point during that time, so there was an older man who, I forget the story, whether he knew him in Switzerland or knew him in Brisk, one of the other ones, a very old person, in the year 2000, or whatever it is, the last couple of years, said, I want to go see Rav Steinemann. He said, well, it's kind of hard for you to get. He says, no, I don't want to talk to him. I just want to go in and see him, right? Which one might think is like the equivalent of when someone comes over to me, hey, Rabbi, do you have a minute? Yeah. So I just want to go in and see him. So they brought him in, and he saw him. He said, okay, I can leave now. I don't need to talk to him. I don't need to disturb him. I'm ready to leave. So what's going on? Why do you just want to see him? So he said, when we were children together, I wandered into the base medrash at 2 a.m. once on a Friday night, and he was just sitting and learning, and shaking and learning, very involved with his studies. And I went over to him and I said, like, what are you still doing up? why are you here right now? So he said, because I'm working on becoming a kli kibul lahashras hashchina. What does that mean? I want to be a receptacle for the divine presence. Right? So who, like, you would expect the answer to be, I want to be Eved Hashem, I want to be Yerushalayim. Who says that? Right? That I want to be a receptacle for the divine Shekhinah, right? So obviously we're talking about somebody who's not normal. And that's okay to recognize that they're not normal, and there is a value to come to that. But yet, whatever they did have to overcome, they were able to. What has to be able to highlight both the challenge as well as the accomplishment, and perhaps the start, even if the starting point might have been at a different point than other people were at. Okay, so that is his that is the final thought there. And I want to share one more.
I just wanted to add that that what they carried out was not a simple task. It was complicated with all these different details. Just to follow it exactly the way it was not so simple.
Uh-huh. Okay, so Bruce says they deserve the praise. All right, pshat number 3. We got Frank's pshat, we got the Rav Neiman's pshat, and we got Bruce's pshat. Okay, all good. I want to share one more issue on this parasha. I think we sort of shared this when we learned Horatius, because it covers both. And that is the shashelis that appears in this week's parasha. In Pasuk Chav Gimel. In Pasuk Chav Gimel, it says, Vayishcha. Okay, so that is the fourth and final time that a shalshelis appears over the course of the Chumash. Right. So the first three are what?
Yosef.
Very good. So Yosef with Potiphar's wife is number 3. Number 2 was.
Number 2 is Yosef.
Tamar. Was it Tamar?
Yehuda and Tamar.
Okay, Yehuda and
Tamar.
Okay, Yehuda and Tamar, good. And then what was the other one?
And
I'm looking at the wrong section here. Right, and the other one was Eliezer. Right, that Eliezer, when he finished the test, when he finished establishing the test, so it says Vayomer, the Vayomer, where he starts speaking to Rivka, is also gets the Shalshel. So what is unique about all those, all three of those, and that appear in Bereishis? So Rabbi...
The ambivalence.
What do you mean ambivalence?
Ambivalence meaning that the three cases we just mentioned, the people involved, they could have done yes or they could have done no.
Okay.
Yehuda could have not admitted that he
very good, yes,
with this or not. Yosef, he didn't have to go, you know, with Potiphar. Yes, am I going to do it? Am I not?
Right.
I want to do it or not do it. So there's a lot of ambivalence.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm not sure ambivalence is the right word, but there's challenge, there's tension, there's all of those. Right. That is what's being highlighted there. That these people have difficult decisions. Right. Eliezer, it's well documented, wanted him for his daughter. Right. And Yehuda was about to do something that was going to embarrass him greatly. And Yosef, if you look at the Gemara's description of what Yosef did here, I mean, he was, right, with the claws, yes, right? And Yosef had
his father's face.
Right, he saw his father's face, but it's only after he looked to see his father's face, right? It was a very big check. Here he is being left and deserted by his family, etc. What, right? This was his ticket to freedom and whatever. And Yosef was able to hold back and not do the sin of Potiphar's wife. So all of those are clear. What's the tension here?
What
the tension here is in Pasuk Chaf Gimel 23. What's the tension here? Right, that they offer the ayil ashiel b'lim v'yismuchu Aaron uvan v'tzidei l'arosha ayil, that they put their hands on top of the Aaron and sons put their hands on top of the ayil v'yishchat v'yikach Moshe midamo, and then shechted, meaning it sounds like Moshe shechted it, and took the dam v'yitin al tenoch, and then took the blood on the right ear of Aaron and the thumb of Aaron and the toes of Aaron. What's the tension in this pasuk with this shalshalat? So I heard this from I read this the first time from Rabbi Jonathan Sachs. However, looking around, I noticed that he actually quotes a Rishon on it that sort of says this. I couldn't find a way to get the Rishon, but I saw also someone quote in the name of Rav Yaakov Neuberger, who's one of the Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva University, also Rav in Bergenfield today. So this right. So what is the idea of the tension in this parsha? Because Moshe is about to give the kahuna to his brother Aaron, right? And that's a challenging thing, right? Moshe is somewhat of a punishment to Moshe, right? The Medrash tells us that when Moshe told Hashem that, oh, why should I do this, let my brother do this, Hashem said, all right, we'll give Aaron a job too, right? And Aaron will have the job of being the Kohen Gadol. And Moshe is now giving up on these things, which he's giving up to his brother Aaron. So that is, that's good. That's a good thing. So I thought today I'd go a little bit further, because then I found this article in ish.com, Rabbi Ari Khan, who points out that yes, we agree with that. The only problem is that it's in the middle of the story, not in the beginning. That this whole perek is dealing with the sanctification of Aaron and his sons. And what's going on? What's going on here? Right? Why is it specifically at this point the shechita that is being done? So it's not, and it's also beyond that. Beyond that, he points out that Moshe retains his kahuna status. According to many Rishonim, Moshe retains his kahuna status. In fact, we announced that as part of Kabbalah Shabbos. Anybody know where we do it? Moshe v'Aaron v'Kohanav u'Shmuel korei Shema. What does that mean? It means Moshe and Aaron, the Kohanim. Right? Including Moshe in that category. In fact, Moshe might have been able to, I don't know if he ever did, but it could be that al pi halacha, Moshe retained the ability to continue to do the avoda for the rest of his life. So what is the tension going on here? So
the first time he slaughtered anything either.
Right. So what's going on at this point of the story that he has his tension? So he suggests that it's really two things, but one is he suggests that at this point he's about to sanctify Aaron. How is he going to sanctify Aaron? By putting the dam on his forehead, his hands, and his toes, or his ears, his fingers, and his toes, and that his entire body was going to be kadosh, and that was something that Moshe was not going to be able to participate in. Moshe was not going to be entirely kadosh, while Aaron was able to. That Aaron then now has the schus of being entirely in a realm of kadusha. Moshe is not going to be able to approach that. Moshe is still going to be the political leader. Moshe is still going to be the king. He's still going to have to deal with all the people, not just the kadosh things, but even the non-kadosh things. And where does that come out the most, perhaps? And that is in their children. Aaron's children are going to be kohanim. What happens to Moshe's kids? We don't know. We never know what happens to Moshe's kids. But there is a couple, if you look throughout Chazal, there's a couple of ounces of criticism that are given towards Moshe about that. A couple of years, when I was teaching, a couple of years ago, Rav Schechter came and spoke here on a Sunday morning. And I think at that time I was teaching at Torah Academy. And I set it up that the girls would have, the middle school girls would have an opportunity to speak with him after. So I told them they should prepare questions to ask him. So why is one of the girls' questions? Says, why is it that we know more about Korach's kids than we do about Moshe's kids? And Moshe said, probably because Moshe wasn't a very good parent. What? But I said that was what he said. He said I wouldn't have said those words. As he said, so probably because Moshe didn't have time to learn with his children. Moshe was too busy with everybody else. Probably the more politically correct way of saying it would be because Moshe first saw his own kids as he did all of the other children as well, and the effort that he put into all of the children is what he put into his own children. So that is a big issue. I mean, that is a big that opens a big can of worms. Certainly in the realm of the rabbinate, it opens up a big can of worms. Rabbi J.J. Schechter is fond of pointing out that of all of the thousands of people that Aaron taught Torah to, if you look in the Rambam describes Avram as speaking thousands and thousands of Talmidim. Right? What happened to all of those Talmidim? We don't know. The only thing left of Avram's legacy is really his son Yitzchak. Right, that's really his son. That's part of his muster dust. Make sure you don't, neglect your children and those kinds of things. But you have that, and perhaps that's what was the hesitancy here: the complete kedusha that Moshe was going to be bestowing upon Aaron, and the fact that Aaron's kedusha would be passed on to his children. Well, that wouldn't necessarily be the case with regards to Moshe. Okay. So, anyways, we did four thoughts over the course of today. Number one was the issue here that when you begin things, it has to be perfect. You have to have the korban in the morning, not just in the afternoon. The second thing that we had here was the idea of Moshe being above, beyond reproach. When he appointed Aaron, he said, Hashem told me to do it this way. We have the idea from the Sefer Darkei Musar of that perhaps the praise of Aaron was not just following directions, but that he got to the point where he didn't have a Yitzhahara to not follow directions. That in addition to Frank's pshat and to Bruce's pshat. And then finally we had the idea of the tension of Vayishchat, of Moshe giving things over to Aaron, perhaps not just because Aaron would be the Kohen Gadol, Moshe wouldn't, but because Aaron would be able to benefit and be in full sanctity, and as well as be able to pass it on to his children, which is something that Moshe would not be able to do. Alright, I wish you all a good Shabbos!